everyone. This is the Stay at Home Mom Yeah Right podcast. You are about to listen to my mom. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you like it, please give it 5 stars. Thank you.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Stay at Home Mom, Yeah Right podcast. I'm Sarah Smith, your host, and I'm so excited to be joined by Jessica Bell Terry. She is a wife, host, youth advocate, entrepreneur, ministry school graduate, school director, and foster mama in Kansas City, Missouri. Jessica began her career in youth advocacy almost 10 years ago in Los Angeles. Her experience as a mentor has opened the door to allow her to speak up for the youth and communities who have been muted. She has had the opportunity to speak, host events, and connect with people from all walks of life to encourage them via blogging, public speaking, and her own podcast, Unmute Your Mic. Jessica's life work is dedicated to loving, encouraging, and speaking up for the parents who take the road less traveled, for the youth who feel alone, and for every person who believes that they cannot overcome what they have been through. Welcome to my podcast, Jessica. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing? Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to speak to me. What has life in this pandemic been like for you and your family?
Okay. So it's been a lot. I think the pandemic threw a lot of curves and turns our way. So me and my husband actually got married during the pandemic, engaged and married.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Really and good. During that process, we actually decided that we were going to further complicate our schedules and become foster parents. So while we were planning our wedding, we were also taking the courses to become licensed foster parents. So we got married and then kind of got licensed all around the same time. So, you know, it was a busy couple of years for sure.
Very busy time. What have you learned about yourself during this time?
I think that I have more endurance than I thought I had. You know, when you're single, or when you don't have children yet, what you think is busy is not busy until you add other things onto your calendar. So, you know, it was one thing getting married and adding my spouse and, you know, figuring that out. But then once we threw in becoming foster parents, it was a bunch of just like, I was like, wow, I didn't even know I had this much time in my day once we started becoming foster parents.
So did you all meet during the pandemic or were you already together?
So we already knew each other for about a year prior to the pandemic. And then actually during the pandemic, when we were like, we both work in education, so we both ended up being at home and getting to spend more time with each other. We would go for walks or meet up at the park. And it just really kind of quieted our life to where both of us were running around doing so much stuff. We both work in youth development. We may not have had the time otherwise to kind of sit down and really get to know each other on the level that we did.
I love that. So now you both are foster parents. You have a heart for the youth. What led you to this journey?
So I know for me, I have been a teacher for as long as I can remember. But first it was Sunday school, and then I went into juvenile detention centers. And then I started doing like conflict resolution classes. And so I was teaching children who had gone through trauma how to deal with their emotions. And in doing that, I realized a lot of the children I was talking to were kids that were in group homes or in foster care. And so I was talking to kids who were, you know, 5, 6, and 7 years old who had gone through some things I couldn't even imagine. And during that process, I learned how important a foster parent is in a child's journey, whether that journey is them returning back home or that journey is them being adopted. And then my husband is a football coach and he also works in youth development. And so he would always have like kids that moms would call him and be like, my son's out of control. Can you keep him for a week? And both of us, we learned that the importance of a village, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the process of becoming a foster parent?
So initially you're taking classes, right? So they put you through like these different classes and they tell you like, oh, what being a foster parent is. But I like to tell people all the time that the journey does not start until you actually have a child placed into your home. But it's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of background checks. You know, they come to your house. They make sure that your house is safe for a child or children, depending on how many you foster. Everything from getting your car inspected to looking at your income to kind of make sure that you're not fostering for an income. But that you're doing it for the correct reasons. But once you go through that process, it is actually fairly quick just because there are so many children and not enough foster parents. So we got licensed in September, September 8th, and we had kids on our doorstep literally by September 9th.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So how long did it take from the time that you filled out that paperwork?
It was about a 6 to 7 month process. So because the classes are like 3 months. Mm-hmm. So once you do the classes, then after you do your paperwork, and we could have done it a little quicker, but we were also getting married. So we kind of like we're lagging our feet with a little bit of the stuff. But once you do the classes, as soon as you can like get your paperwork in and have someone come and inspect your house, you can get licensed pretty quickly after that.
And is there something that you wish you were trained on, or is it something that you have to just dive into?
There's so many things that me and my husband have said, like, I wish we would have known this before. Not that it would have stopped us from becoming foster parents, but that it would have made us more prepared, I would say. But it's kind of hard to say we could be trained on it because every child is different and they're bringing their own baggage and their own trauma to the table. And so you really don't know what you're going to get until you get it. But I wish I would have known how busy their schedules are, because it's way busier than just like maybe children that you've given birth to, because sometimes they're still having visits with their moms and visits with their dads. And then they got therapy and then they have visits with other members of their families. And so it's like you're kind of coexisting with this other family at the same time and trying to make it work.
Now, do you have any children in your care now?
Yes, we do. We currently have two.
So, and do you maintain that relationship with their families?
We do with the mom. I actually have really built a really good relationship with her, and it's been a beautiful process because it's really hard, you know. Sometimes the parents are upset with you because one, they don't want their children in care in the first place, or two, they think you're trying to take their child or, you know, pit their child against them. But what I've learned in building a relationship with her is that I've gotten to know the kids better from getting to know her and just kind of hearing her heart behind, you know, the things that she's going through and the things that she wants to do better. But it's also a weird dynamic because we've had the kids now for a while and we love them. And, you know, we're like, I don't want them to go anywhere. So it's a really hard thing to kind of balance in your head.
How old are the kids?
11 and 1.5.
Oh, wow. So that's totally different, like a generation, basically.
Yes. And they're siblings. So it is a sibling set as well.
Oh, that's nice that they're together, that you're able to keep them together.
Yeah.
Now, when the foster agency calls you and says, I have a child available, like, how does that work?
So they literally call you and say, I have a child available. And then, like, no exaggeration, any foster parent who's listening knows. They will say, I have a child. This is their age. You know, they'll either say, like, oh, they're in police protective custody, or they just got pulled out of their house, or they'll kind of tell you that. And then as foster parents, you kind of have to know what questions to ask, because they won't tell you a whole lot. So then I'll normally ask, you know, okay, are there any, like, what are the behaviors? And so they'll tell you, like, because there's different levels. So they'll say, oh, it's a level 2. So that might be a child who's got a little bit of behavior. And then it's a level 5, which might be a child who's been kicked out of all their previous foster homes or was incarcerated at some point. And so that you can ask them what level, and they have to be upfront in that and tell you, you know, hey, this is where they're at. But that's pretty much how it goes. And then they say, do you want to take them? You don't see a picture. You don't get to talk to the children. You don't, you know, it's just, yeah, you ask your questions and then you say yes or no.
Wow. And how do you decide if a child will be a good fit for your home or not?
So with me and my husband, honestly, the call we got was the first call we got. And, you know, they told us it was a sibling set. It was 2 kids. They told us the ages. And, you know, me and my husband, we prayed about it and we said, okay, we'll take them. You know, we had a few questions and, basically, you know, kind of like asking about behaviors, asking about medical, because we did want to know, you know, like, we have stairs in our house. So we don't have a wheelchair friendly house, because our door, you have to go upstairs to get into our, like, actual place. So just certain things like that just will kind of be like a deal breaker, simply because we couldn't care for the child properly. But other than that, we just, you know, we prayed on it and then we said, you know what, we're going to do it. And they called us at 7 p.m. and the children showed up at 11:58 p.m.
Oh, wow.
With nothing, by the way.
Not so you have to go out and buy all the clothes and supplies and beds and everything.
Yeah. So we kind of had our house already set up. We had like 2 extra rooms that we were using to foster. So we had like 1 bed and then we had another bed in the room. So we had that kind of stuff. But then when you don't know the ages that you're getting, when you don't know the genders, it's hard to decorate. It's hard to try to, you know, prepare, because you're like, you don't want to have these 2 girly bedrooms and then you have 2 teenage boys come in, or, you know.
Like,
it's like, we're awkward, because you want the children to feel welcome. No, it's a very hard situation. So the last thing you want to do is have them come in and be like, I definitely don't belong here. So one of the things we did was we left the rooms pretty plain and allowed them to pick out their decor once they came.
Oh, that's nice. Now, what are the misconceptions of foster care?
Okay, so a few of the misconceptions I know for sure is that foster care is like the cheap way to adopt. Mm-hmm. So some people say, oh, I'm fostering because I want to adopt. And adoption is expensive. And though a lot of kids do get adopted out of foster care, the goal of foster care is reconciliation with family. And I think that's a big misconception, because people say, oh, like, I'm just going to foster. And because when you foster, the state, you know, they pay for everything. So you say, oh, I'm just going to foster. And then these kids come and you don't realize, like, hey, their goal, their family plan is for them to go back home with their mother. So if you're fostering just because you want to adopt, you're going to be really heartbroken. Sometimes it does end that way, because, you know, just the parents can't get it together. And, you know, then you become an adoptive resource. But I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that, you know, oh, I'm just going to keep these kids forever. And it's not always the case. And you really don't know. You know, I have friends who foster who have gotten a child and the parents were never apart. And then they did adopt them in a year and it worked out that way. And then I have friends who have 20 to 30 kids that have came in and out of their house over the years, who maybe stayed for a month or 2 months. And the situation is different. So I think that being the biggest misconception. And then that, you know, you're supposed to be a part of the child's village. So that means it's good to get to know their mom. It's good to get to know a grandma or somebody in their life, especially when you're fostering older children, because you can't erase their history. Like me and my husband talk about it all the time. We can be the best foster parents to the 11-year-old, but we're still like, she's still like, yeah, when am I going back to my mom? And it's because she's 11, like, you know, she spent the last 11 years with her mother. And so even though we do amazing things and we, you know, they're very much a part of our family, it's still like, oh, it's cool that I did this with you, but also like, I still miss my mom. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the 1.5-year-old, he's like, we're all he knows at this point. So it's such a different dynamic with the age groups as well.
Right. Now, what should people think about before becoming a foster parent?
One of the biggest things you should think about is if you are emotionally ready. It is an emotional roller coaster. You will get extremely attached to the children, and you will love them with all of your heart, and then they still might go home. So it's an emotional, it's really emotional. I would also say, speaking from somebody who has not had children yet, and is in the process of trying and going through that, do not foster as a replacement for having a child. It is not going to fill that gap. Now, if you can't naturally conceive and you decide to foster or adopt, and that's beautiful and that's amazing, but it's not a replacement. Like, oh, I'll just foster instead of having a child. Like, you have to go. I know for me, like, they told us, like, you know, go through therapy and work through, like, the grieving of not being able to have a natural child. Mm-hmm. And then do this. And that's the same with adoption as well. Like, if you're just trying to, like, you want to do it for the right reason. So one of the big things I would tell people is just like, make sure you're emotionally in a good place, and make sure you have time. It's good. It is a time commitment. Like I said, our children, they go to therapy. They have visits once or twice a week with their parents, whether virtually or in person. So it's just, and if you do have other children, you know, factoring that into the schedule as well. You know, if you become a foster parent and you do have birth children, just making sure that, like, those children, the foster children, don't become everything and your children kind of fall by the wayside, because they are going to require, at least in the beginning, significantly more.
Now, in the Black community, I know that the statistics are very low for fostering. What would you say to that person who's kind of on the fence of wanting to foster?
I would let them know that it is probably the best thing you can ever do. It is hard. It is the road less traveled, but it is such a beautiful experience when you know that you can make a difference in a child's life. So if you have a heart for youth, if you have a heart for really impacting children in a way that really matters when they need it the most, I think that it's something you should consider. And, you know, you did bring up a really good point, because it is very low in the Black community. And I think it's also important that a lot of foster children have foster parents that look like them. They're already in a difficult situation. And I know one of the things that's helped us is our foster children look like us. And it helped us because, like, she doesn't feel so left out. Or when we go out and someone says, oh, your mom, or oh, you're whatever, they just assume that, you know, and she doesn't get upset with it. And so I just think it makes it a little easier. And that's not saying anything against people who foster different races. I think it's beautiful and amazing. But I think in the Black communities, we do have a lot to offer. And sometimes it's just like, oh, why would I do that? Or, you know, I don't understand that. So it's a lot of just not understanding it too. But if it's something you're considering, I think it is something that is very rewarding, and it's a beautiful experience, and you do get to learn so much about yourself in the process.
Now, how can we change the narrative?
I think not making it so, like, Or like, you know, like sometimes I've heard people say like, I take care of nobody's kids. Or, you know, I think if we get back to the village mentality that they used to have back in the day of like, it takes a village to raise a child. I think people might start to look at it a little bit differently. But also, you know, sometimes it's hard because people hear like foster horror stories where, you know, they bring a foster child in and the foster child does all this crazy stuff. And, you know, it just it makes their life difficult. But I tell people all the time, I was like, in every scenario, you can think about the negative thing that can happen. You know, something negative can happen with your children. So I think having more conversations about it. Even when we took our classes, we were the only people who were like under 50 and we were the only people who were Black.
Wow.
So I think a lot of time people think of foster parents as like empty nesters or, you know, people who are, you know, their kids have, you know, kids have already moved out. Kids are in college or extremely wealthy. I've heard people say that too, like, oh, I don't have enough money to foster or something like that. But if you have the space, if you have a bed in a room in your house, like that could really be a blessing to a child who is in need.
What has been the most rewarding part of your journey?
The most rewarding part has been seeing the changes in the kids. When they first showed up, especially our oldest one, she seemed disheveled and terrified and didn't really want to talk to us and didn't really want to open up. And then to see her now, like, you know, wanting to come home and tell us about her day or ask us for advice about something or just open up has been so beautiful because it's been a process. And when you're in it, sometimes you're like, oh, my goodness, like, what else can I do? And then you have those moments where it's like, you know, she asked my husband to go to the father-daughter dance with her at her school. Mm-hmm. And just like stuff like that, where it's like, OK, we're doing something right. Like something is working here. That has been, you know, rewarding. And also just knowing that we have the ability to change the trajectory of their life. Because we were able to step in at a time that was very crucial, whereas they may have been split up or put into group homes and they've gotten to get that like one-on-one attention and still feel like they're a part of a family, even if it's not the family that they were originally given.
Right. Wow. Well, Jessica, you are definitely changing the world right where you are. And I absolutely love that and commend you for that. What do you do for self-care?
I'll be honest, I was terrible at self-care. The first couple of months, me and my husband were just like, I haven't even sat down in 3 months.
Right.
But now I'm more intentional just about getting my alone time. Me and my husband will take turns going out, doing something by ourselves, or even while we're in the house, we'll just be like, hey, I'm going to take an hour. And you got the kids and, you know, I'll go into the room. I'll read. I love, you know, listening to podcasts and just relaxing and easing my mind. I have a busy job, too. So just being able to kind of remove myself. And then me and my husband have been very big on taking vacations with just us. So we have amazing family who will watch them and we'll be like, hey, we're going here for 3 days just because we just need, you know, sometimes because we're still kind of newlyweds. Yeah. So sometimes to like decompress and just like, hey, let's just only have to worry about ourselves for like 2 days.
Oh, that's great. I thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to speak to me. And I just wish you continued success with everything that you're doing and changing the world. I love it. Changing the trajectory of children's lives. And
thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course. Thank you.
You have just listened to the Stay at Home Mom Yeah Right podcast with my mom. I hope you enjoy listening. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you liked it, please give it 5 stars. Thank you.